Whew, that was heavy. Isn't that true that often our mindset, whether we're anxious or whether overwhelmed or whether we tell ourselves, hey, this might be tough and I'm going to get through it, it's amazing how just changing your mindset can take the same problem and make it heavier or make it lighter. That can affect our relationships. It also can affect our decision making. So today I want to talk about how our mindset and how we think about our decisions can really affect our future, can affect our relationship to temptations, can also face how we think about life. So to do this, let me just give this warning in advance. Don't try this at home. I'm a trained professional. I think for many of us, when we think about our life, we think about it as a balancing act, right? If I could just stay balanced, if I could just, okay, well, my wife wants me to do this, and work wants me to do that, okay, I just haven't fallen over. Success is I haven't fallen over. And if I'm lucky, while I got the balance down, maybe I'll move forward a little bit. In order to move forward this time, we have to go back a little bit, right? We got to go revisit that decision we made in order to move forward. And so a lot of times decision-making, it just seems like a bunch of isolated decisions, and you're asking, what's the scoreboard? Well, sometimes the scoreboard just feels like, well, can I stay balanced? Can I not fall off? Can I not break my neck? Other times, I want to do that, and now that I've kind of got the balance down in my 20s and 30s, we're going someplace. I got goals. I got plans. We want to get there. If we can get there quickly, I want to get there quickly, right? That's the goal. And okay, we get to another stage. Some contentment here, some joy here. I want to try and share a principle about decision-making that takes every decision you make and shows it's part of a larger plan. It actually brings a deep sense of purpose and meaning to everything you do. The principle is simply this. Every step you take is a trajectory toward life or death. Now, that may seem overly dramatic, but I'm going to try and show you today that our life, our decisions, our mindset about those decisions really comes down to not each individual decision, but how does each decision set me up for a certain trajectory toward life? So we're going to build a teeter-totter here. Take me just a second. Let's see. We'll go here. And here. Make sure I don't fall off. We'll do four. Now, if that's true, that every step we take is part of a trajectory, then all of a sudden you might say to yourself, hey, I'm on a really good trajectory. Then you meet with a financial advisor saying you think you're going in a good trajectory, it's going to create life and everything else, and they say, actually, the way you're spending or the way you're not saving, oh, it's actually a little bit headed not the way you thought it would. Same thing can be happening in marriage. You can say, oh, I got a great marriage, things are going well. And somebody may come to you and say, hey, listen, I think maybe the way things are going, a marriage counselor, if you keep withholding sex the way you are, if you keep neglecting your spouse the way you are, if you keep not prioritizing each other, you might think you're headed here, but those particular habits don't lead there. You're not on a trajectory toward life, breathing more life into your relationship. You're actually on a trajectory heading downward. You're going to bring more death and pain into your life. With your kids. Oh, I love my kids. If you don't spend any time with your kids when they're young, then don't be surprised as you get older that they don't want to spend any more time with you. If you don't get to know your parents, then don't be surprised that you don't know them at the funeral. Temptation's that way too. You can say, I don't intend to get hurt. I don't intend to be in problems. I'm headed to a good place. But you've heard friends of yours do that, right? They think they're on a trajectory. This is good. I deserve this. But you're like, no. This path, I've seen 100 guys go down this path. It says not going to lead where you think it's going to lead. I had a person one time said, every man is one beer and one wink away from a bad decision. And yet the whole time they're on that, they're saying, no, I won't go that far. It's just lunch. I'm just going to lunch. Nothing wrong with lunch. Yeah, but you're not just going to lunch. You've switched trajectories from this trajectory to that. What if as we think about our decisions, we begin to think about them as a trajectory? If I keep doing what I'm doing 5 years, 10 years, 20 years from now, what will my health be like if I keep eating the way I'm eating? What will my finances be like if I keep spending the way I'm spending? What will my sense of transcendence be if I keep seeking out the big answers at the same pace I'm currently seeking it out? So I'm going to give you three principles about trajectory. Number one, it's your direction, not your intention, that determines your destination. All right, don't you know people all the time, you talk to your kids about this all the time. Guys, I'm really worried. You make a bad decision. This path doesn't go there. And they say, I don't intend to get hurt. I don't intend to have that happen. Dad, you know what you're talking about? You know what you're talking about? Oh, no, I don't intend it to happen. And while they're on this trajectory, thinking they're going upward, intending this is going to be amazing, it's going to be wonderful, and you're like, this is not going to lead where you think it intends. You're pointing there, but you're actually making decisions heading there. This is not going to get you. And the whole time, they don't see it. They can't see it because they're so focused on telling themselves about their intentions, and you're trying to tell them about their direction. There's an old proverb written about 1000 BC. It talks about sage advice. And it says this, there's a way of life, there's a destination in life that winds upward. It takes you to the peak. And it's a way of living, it's a way of decision making, it's a way of processing, it's a way of thinking, and it winds you upward to the top of the mountain. And what he's saying is that wisdom is an ascending trajectory. Morally, that's true. Practically, that's true. Relationship with God, when you're connected to certain truths, it moves you toward greater joy, greater life, and greater flourishing. That's what wise people do. They think about their decisions in the terms of a trajectory. And the wise person does that he may turn away from hell below. In Hebrew, the word hell is the word sheol, which means death. That there are certain decisions you make, they're going to walk you toward breathing more and more life into your life, inwardly and outwardly. And there's certain decisions you're going to make, they're going to breathe more and more death into the decisions you make. And you're going to wake up one day and go, oh, how did this relationship die? How did I end up here? And you just followed a path. And the direction you took led to the destination, not the intention you had all along. So what are some of the mindsets that would lead to this? Well, let me tell you why someone who's always focused on their intention doesn't see it coming. Right? A temptation comes their way, and they say to themselves, it won't happen to me. It won't happen to me. Not that big a deal. Just going to lunch. You know, my wife and I had kind of a difficult season. I just thought a little lonely. I thought it'd be good to have a conversation with my old high school sweetheart. I go, I don't think it's a good idea. Oh, I don't intend anything to happen. I don't intend any this to go too far. It was kind of fun. I saw her online. Thought it'd be nice to reconnect with her. And the whole time they talk about how it's not a big deal, it's not going to happen to me. And you're like, wait a second. I've seen 1,000 people go down this road, and they all end up on this road. It's a path toward that destination, but they don't see it. In fact, the whole time, what they feel inside because of that, it won't happen to me. They feel safe. They feel rewarded. They even feel justified. Well, you know, if he or she was doing a better job, I wouldn't be tempted to find my relational needs other places. And so they keep going down the path, thinking they're going where they intend. Now, what does a wise person do when he thinks about this? Well, let me show you another reel. Instead of saying to yourself, I don't intend to, it won't affect me, or the classic, I think I can handle it, or it won't hurt anyone until ultimately death blows up everything, you wisely say, this path has brought stronger people than me down. I'm going to play the odds that I want to get off this path, and my intention is irrelevant to the direction I'm headed. My intentions don't determine my trajectory. My son, Javen, and I love to go skiing. So about once or every 2 years, we go out west, and we love skiing at this place called Winter Park in Colorado. So we're skiing out there together, and we love tree runs. We got full gear on. We're going through the forest, dodging in and out, back and forth, chasing each other. And if you just about get hit by a limb, you're doing a good job. That's what we call good skiing. So we're weaving in and out these things. And all of a sudden, I carve through the trees, and I see this incredible path. And it's like wider than you can imagine. Typical weaving out of trees. It's a huge path. And I'm like, come over here. And it's like a pitch like this, but it's clear. And he jumps behind me, and we are having a ball. I mean, this is like speed skiing. We're skiing straight down. I'm like, this is amazing. I wonder where this is going to come out. Don't worry. The nice thing about ski places is they always make sure, no matter what path you're on, you end up at the bottom at the lodge. I was having a ball My son was having a ball. We were so enjoying this. This is one of most of my favorite runs I ever did. And then we get to the end, and I carve, and I look around. We are nowhere near anything, except I am surrounded by snow groomers, those giant groomers that go up and down like giant snow plows up the mountain. And I realize I skied down the snow plow road. And I look, we're about a mile from the lodge, and we just have a train track. And if you've ever walked in ski boots, we take our skis off, we throw them over the back of us, and we're walking in the boots for a mile. It was the most painful mile. How did we end up there? It's not because we weren't having fun. It wasn't our intention. It's simply because that path led to this place. And it's easy to see when you're advocating to somebody else. Listen, guys, your department's spending too much. No, I think we're going to be fine. No, you're not going to be fine. Let me show you the direction you're headed, right? All right, number two. Not only your direction determines your destination, but number two, what you give attention to, not your intention, determines your destination. What you spend your time on, what you devote your time on. Back to my example, the grass isn't greener on the other side. The grass is greener where you water it. So what you want to do is, what am I giving my attention to? Give your attention to bitterness, you get more bitter. Give your attention to being grateful, you get more grateful. Your attention, what am I giving my attention to? What are my thoughts? What am my mind ruminate on and gravitate toward and meditate on? What I give attention to will determine my destination. How many people, you're anxious all the time and you wonder if that anxiety is going to help, but anxiety is not leading you here, it's leading you there. It's not bringing more life, it's bringing more death. Here's what this old proverb says, 1000 BC, written by King Solomon as he's trying to reflect on wisdom for life. He says, "The Lord will destroy the house of the proud." And that might seem too judgmental. So think of it this way. God's just saying, proud decision-making will ultimately have its consequence in destruction. Pride comes before destruction, it's another proverb. In other words, what kind of marriage ends up with somebody, married to somebody, and neither of them listen to each other? Is that going to lead to life or death? What kind of marriage are you going to have if both people are not willing to forgive, or just one person is and the other person never compromises? Right? It's going to lead to destruction. However, in contrast to that, God says he will set the boundary of the widow. When you care about the vulnerable, when you think of other people, when you manage your life to think about how do I love other people, help other people, how do I prioritize those who can't help themselves at times, actually it's going to bring life into you. You're going to become a more generous person, a more sacrificial person. The thoughts of the wicked are an abomination to the Lord. We talk about that, those distortions. But the words of the pure are pleasant. Don't you love being around people that when you talk to them, it's life, it's laughter, it's fun, they're just pleasant. And all you got to do is be around somebody opposite of that, and you're like, oh my goodness, oh, 15 minutes with them felt like 3 days. All right, you've been there. He goes on, he who is greedy for gain, if it's all about gain all the time and you're the center of your own world, you're going to trouble your own house because you're going to have everything subordinate itself to money rather than money being an important thing, but it's important things amongst other things. He who hates bribes is going to live. Don't give in to bribes. Actually, hating bribes, that's a way to find life. The heart of the righteous studies, I love this, studies how to answer. Before I speak, before I write that email, before I hit send, let me study this. Is that the best way to say it? Is this really going to lead to a more prosperous conversation? Or you say, oh, I just say it how I feel. Okay, you can say how you feel. See how that works out. Eventually, that's going to blow up in your face, in business, in a relationship. But the wise study how they're going to speak. They think before they speak. They study how they're going to answer. But the mouth of the wicked pours forth evil. whatever's in there comes out. The Lord is far from the wicked because you're not aligned to him. But he hears the prayer of the righteous. So let's just extract out of that. What are these two groups giving attention to? Pride says, I deserve this. How many people ended up making compromises in decisions, fudging things, because, well, I deserve this. They're not paying me enough, I deserve this, and they fudge some things because I deserve this. How many affairs have I walked couples through, and it began with, I deserve this, and my spouse doesn't know that, and that pride leads to that path. The problem with greed is, it's not the joy of success. It's this insatiable, it's never enough, and you keep thinking, if you keep going down the path, it will satisfy, but it doesn't. Rarely does your mind say, well, I may do it if the price is right, but you kind of know that there is a price that you might do it. And when you hear that voice, you realize that's a problem. If I start having a cost to my integrity, a cost by which I will give up that which is important, it's that type of mindset will be a problem. You're like, you know what, I'm not sure it really matters how I think or what's going on in my head. I'm headed toward a good place, just look at my portfolio. But that mindset will change the trajectory. That mindset will flip, and you'll say, well, I thought I was headed here, but I went from success, even financial success, to now it's been all about me, and I made compromises, and I can't tell you how many people I'll sit in my office, and they say, I don't know how I got here. And you know the answer, I do too. One step at a time. And that mindset blinded you from the path you were on. And one small compromise, covering it up, took another compromise to lead there. Now let's ask ourselves, what does the wise person say? Just out of that little proverb. Well, as I think about my financial success, how do I also think about other people? How can I help the vulnerable? How can I not only give to my family and my future generations? That's awesome. And are there any vulnerable people? I want to be a kind of person who thinks of others. I want to study how I answer because, you know what? I want to make sure my motives are pure here. It's not just what I do, but why am I doing it? As I think about heading toward life, I want to make sure my motives for what I do are pure. I want to have pure motives. Well, that means you got to examine your motives. What's my mindset? What was driving why I did what I did? Words matter. We've talked a lot about that in the series. Will I ponder? Will I deliberate? Will I meditate before I answer? I was talking to a friend of mine. He's a big executive, has a lot of executives that report to him. And he said, one of the things he knows financially, because he's in the financial business, he said, as my executives move up through the ranks, they make more and more money. And when you make a little money, you're checking every nickel and every dime. As you make more money, you actually have a tendency not to be quite as accountable to yourself. He said, I had several guys who worked for me that they had a hacker who'd stole something like 20 grand from them over a two-month period of time, and they never noticed. And they didn't notice because the trajectory was there's just so much spending that was unaccountable that they weren't able to leverage it in the best possible way. He said, as the more you make, the more you want to make sure everything's going to the priorities you want. To lose 20 grand in just a month or two and not even notice it. He said, I was trying to teach my executives, even as they move up the ladder, it's still you got to check your trajectory of your savings, of your spending, of all the ways in which you leverage your life. On a different note, I had another friend who came here about a year ago. He'd heard me on the radio on the morning, an evening show. I was doing a conversation with an atheist friend of mine, and we did about an hour on WLW. He heard me. He came to the church. He walks up. He's like, I own my own business. I'm just really an anxious time. I got so much anxiety. So I've never met him before. I prayed for him right over there in this aisle area at our first service. And we prayed together, and I gave him my phone number. He said, I can't believe it, big church. You gave me your phone number. You wanted to go to lunch with me? So he just caught up with me about 3 weeks ago. He goes, Chad, I can't tell you the different mindset this has helped. I didn't realize, I still run the same business. Things are going relatively well. But I realized that much of my mindset was anxiety all the time. I was always meditating on anxiety. I was being anxious all the time. And that mindset of anxiety was just tearing, it was just producing death in me. I've been coming to Horizon now for a year, and there's something amazing about thinking about God, thinking about wisdom, thinking about my motivation, trusting that God might be in control of these things. It's just, I just feel so much more alive. That's what I want for you. I want for me. I want us to be on a trajectory that flourishes us and the people around us. Lastly, is that our connection, not our intention, leads to our destination. What are your thoughts connected to? What are your decisions connected to? What is the trajectory? If you keep doing what you're doing, what is it connected to at the end of the road? This proverb ends this way. It's a little shorter than the last one. The light of your eyes, what you see, what you let into your eyes, rejoices your heart. Are you always watching and reading and meditating on bad news? You know, a good report makes the bones healthy. There's a connection between your mind and your body. That your good report, the things you report on, the things you meditate on, the things you ruminate on, they actually can make even your physical body. You're like, well, that sounds like kind of hocus pocus. Well, ask your doctor about your ulcer. What's he going to tell you? You're so stressed and so worried what you're meditating on, you have a body that has an ulcer, right? So that's leading to death. I want you to lead to bones that are healthy. The ear that hears, now get this one, the rebukes of life will abide among the wise. But he who disdains instruction despises his own soul. Now there's one that's not intuitive. It says, if you want to be in a trajectory toward the best, cleanest, purest soul, if you want to abide among the wise where the wisdom is, what do I need to do? My mindset is, I need to what? I need to hear the rebukes of life. I want correction. I want other people's feedback. Because when you get real feedback from people that you didn't want to hear, you might be aligned to more truth. And then wise people get wiser. Teachable people grow farther. If you don't, you don't have to go that way. You can just despise instruction. You can say, I'm not going to listen. I'm not going to listen to my spouse. I'm not going to listen to my kids. I'm not going to listen to my parents. I'm not going to listen to my boss. I'm not going to listen to my shareholders. I'm not going to listen to anybody. Okay. And eventually, no one will listen to you. Because you've been on a path connected to ego and pride, not connected to wisdom. That's why he finishes here. He says, the fear of God, which is a way of saying the awe of God. The most awesome thing to be connected to is a source of truth, as philosophers call the ultimate reality, God's ultimate reality. I want to connect my decision-making, my thinking, my habits to connected to ultimate reality, truth. And the fear of God, the awe of God is saying that is what would get me connected to the most flourishing life. The fear of the Lord, the awe of the Lord, is the instruction of wisdom. And before you get honored, somebody elevates you, you first get humble and take the feedback. And then you incorporate that feedback and you get honor. You honor yourself, you often get ego and proud. You just do the work of being open and working hard, and you let other people exalt you, and you're filled with more gratitude, you're filled with more gratefulness. You don't mind taking the blame, you don't mind sharing the credit, because it's not about you. It's about the goal and the promise. There's two quick mindsets from that one. Two mindsets. Number one, many of us, our body, our doctors have been telling us, you're on a bad trajectory. You're headed downhill. And you say, no, I'm actually heading uphill. I'm doing great. Greatest time of my life. The doctor says, no. That may be true in your circumstances, but that ulcer is telling you something. That busy brain that won't shut off all the time, it's waking you up at night, that brain is telling you something. That exhaustion you feel all the time, it's telling you something. You're not on a good pathway. You need to turn around. The word repent in the Bible is metamorphosis. It means to turn around and go the opposite direction. If you keep telling yourself, sleep, it's overrated. Fun is a luxury I can't afford right now. It's not going to hurt you today. That mindset's not going to hurt you in a month. But you do that decade after decade, you're not headed there. You're headed there. You can say, I don't have time for the energy for feedback. It's not going to hurt you if it happens for a week or a month or a year. But it sets you up on a trajectory. If you never have time for feedback or for pushback, if you can't even think of the last time you apologized to someone, you're not headed there where you intend. You're headed here because you're not connected to a greater source. And then the thing that promised you joy ended up bringing you pain. I'll tell you a funny example of this. My mom loves to go play bingo. She's 74. She goes to bingo every Thursday. And so I know not to call on Thursdays because my mom's at bingo. Well, she calls me on Friday. She's like, I tell you, I end up not going to bingo because she loves watching Caitlin Clark. She just talks all the time about Caitlin Clark, how Caitlin Clark shot. She just loves talking about Caitlin Clark, and I've never seen like two games. And so I try and show some interest because I don't really watch much sports at all. So she's excited about it. She's like, I decided not to go to bingo. Whoa. I decided not to go to bingo to watch Caitlin Clark play. Oh, that's awesome. So she says she gets into her big recliner, gets all set, got the drinks, got the food, props herself up, gets just in place, turns on TV, the Caitlin Clark episode, you know, not episode, but game begins, and all the electricity in the house goes out. Now, when you're 74, and a year ago, you fell and broke your shoulder, so this whole shoulder doesn't work now. My mom described herself as a turtle who'd been flipped upside down. She goes, it took me 3 hours to get on my recliner. I was literally stuck in my recliner like a taco. I could not get out of there. I was stuck. What promised that evening was to be filled with joy and hope and Caitlin Clark doing amazing things. I didn't get to watch the show, but what was worse is I got trapped in my own recliner. That's what the proverb is saying. Life will tell you, oh my goodness, you're not going to get hurt. This is going to be fine. This is going to bring you the best kind of life. And you're going to be stuck as a giant turtle taco in your own recliner, not getting to see and experience all the things that was promised. Because you didn't realize you were on a trajectory the whole time. I'll give you one more story. In the late 19th century, there was a tightrope walker, and his name was Charles Blondin. And he ran a cable all the way across the Niagara Gorge, all the way across that thing. Crowds would gather to see Charles Blondin, and sure enough, he would be walking on that tightrope back and forth and back and forth and doing amazing things and tricks, and everybody just like you, nervous, everybody would fall, what's going on? Whoa, what's going on there? Doing amazing things. Crowd would cheer, the great Charles Blondin. So he goes back to the other end, and he pulls out a wheelbarrow. Again, on a cable. He pushes the wheelbarrow out, comes in the middle of the crowd, and he yells out, how many people believe I can push this wheelbarrow all the way across to the other side? Yes, cheers, celebration, Charles Blondin, I believe. How many of you trust me enough to be in the wheelbarrow? One 10-year-old kid, I do. Shut up, Jimmy. There's a big difference between believing something and trusting something. And that's what he's getting at here, is that if you want to come to a destination, you got to trust that when it feels like this is crazy, that's not the way of wisdom. That is not going to serve my purpose. You're going to have to trust to get into that wheelbarrow and say, okay, if there's 1,000 years of experience that this leads to the right place, I'm going to trust the person carrying me, I'm going to trust the path I'm on to lead to that end. So, how about for you? How would we think about this message, except for the message Chad didn't die in? That might be one way to think about this message. I remember that message where Chad almost died when he was walking on that wheelbarrow. What if you thought about this idea simply this? I want to track my trajectory, not just my trail. And this is why often people can have success for many years and don't continue success because they're tracking where they've been. Oh my goodness, I've done amazing things. Really amazing things. And they're legitimately amazing. You did amazing things to get there. They're always looking backwards. But they're not looking at the trajectory of their life. And they don't even realize it because all they're looking at is all the amazing things it did. All the amazing things we did in the past. And when you're always looking in the past, you may not realize that you've backed into a bad trajectory. But it's never too late. I went boating with a guy recently, and he's like, man, I just don't have the relationship I want to have with my 20-year-old. Don't even know him, and he didn't really know me. I said, it's never too late to start. You can't make up for lost time. But let's change the trajectory. We started brainstorming his way to change the trajectory. I said, you got 40 more years to have a relationship with your son and him with you. Let's start now just changing the trajectory. So where are you at? What's your trajectory? On your health. If you keep doing what you're doing in your health, where will you end up in 10 more years? If you keep saving the way you're saving, where will you be in 10 more years? If you keep being as generous as you are right now, how amazing will the celebration be of how generous you're able to be in 10 years? If you begin to intentionally think about the bigger questions, who am I? What happens when I die? What's the source of truth in life? What really matters? What should I prioritize? What's my purpose? If you keep tracking those questions at the same pace you're currently tracking them, will you find answers next year, next month, next decade? And do any of those questions make you want to change your trajectory? To ask yourself simply, am I headed toward higher ground? Kind of with you, that's where I want to be. I don't want to end up stumbling into quicksand. I want to be so surprised that every little act that seems so insignificant at the time made deposits over time that ended up leading me to life and joy and hope, not death and pain and hopelessness and whatever its form is. Track your trajectory, not just your trail, and ask yourself one question: am I headed toward higher ground?